Hello and welcome back to episode 4 of Binging Bridgerton. I am joined today by Beth. Hi, Beth.
Hello.
And Manish from the It Pod to Be You podcast. Hi, Manish.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. So, Manish, what happens in this episode?
Well, I think the major plot point is the Prince of Prussia is heavily courting Daphne, and he gives her a very beautiful necklace that she has a very visceral reaction to. And he's taking her all around town, and they're openly courting, much to the chagrin of poor Cressida, who I think had initial flirtation with the prince, but I think the prince has gone for the more beautiful and less snippy girl. Can't really blame him. But I think Daphne is still longing for Simon, so she's a little going through the motions with the prince, and somewhat putting on a show for Simon when they're in public together, but she can't deny her feelings, even after being rejected from him.
That necklace, by the way, just cracks me up, because there's a point in the episode where she takes it off and puts it on the sort of balustrade, and then we never see that necklace again.
Yes! Thank you!
I was so worried it was going to get lost. I was like, girl, this. I was like, if this becomes some kind of thing of, like, Daphne stole the necklace, I'll be so happy. But, no, I was very worried about that necklace. Because, you know, whenever things like that happen in a show or something, I get very nervous. So I'm like, oh, no.
Well, and, like, all three of us are Bollywood fans, so it's like, that is a significant thing. You're going to identify somebody with that. It's going to reunite you with somebody. Like, you can't just leave jewelry lying around.
Right.
But, like, all of Twitter was also on the case of the necklace. Like, that was all anybody could talk about. It's like, but what happened to the necklace? I saw the entire show just wanting to find out what happened. Beth, what else happens in this episode?
There's so much. I'll pivot to a minute to the Featheringtons, because there's more boxing happening, and Mr. Featherington is a gambler, as are all the men on this show, as far as I can tell. He's just really bad at it. And we find out in episode 4 that he has gambled way beyond his means, and including he has gambled away all the daughter's dowries. Which is why he tries to break up. I forget the names of the other two Featherington daughters, but one of them has found a nice man with whom she has funny conversations about cheese. And he has scared him off because he can't, you know, he can't pay a dowry right now. So poor Mr. Featherington, you know, actually cries and, like, is emotional with his wife. And she kind of pats him awkwardly on the back like, there, I don't actually love you at all.
I think there is, like, all these little subplots, you know, the Featheringtons finding out that they're broke, and then him asking her, what should we do? And then the conversations about cheese between the two of them, and then Daphne and the prince going to the boxing match, and then the prince being very sweet to her, actually, and discussing about how he wants a big family. So there's this constant undercurrent throughout this episode about marriage and what it signifies. And of course, Marina is being pimped out throughout this whole process. Yeah. You know, they're still trying to find someone to marry her. And the top candidate appears to be this gross old man who wants to use her as a broodmare. And there's this entire conversation that's happening about what does marriage mean to these people, because in the first couple of episodes, we saw Violet Bridgerton talking about how marriage is about love and companionship, and how, you know, she had a happy marriage and she wants that for her family and for her children. But what we are seeing in effect here is that people are trying to find what they have in common with each other, and if they can tolerate being married to each other, and if they can find common cause with each other, I think.
Eloise is also on the hunt for Lady Whistledown, and she is very impressed by this woman who is making a living, right? It's like, making a living writing, and she's trying to track down who it could be. She has a list of suspects, and of course she goes to her, like, one of the servants in the house's quarters and is digging through, like, an entitled princess, which I thought was very funny when the servant just started laughing at her and was like, we don't have any time to write stuff, and we don't get invited to anything. So, like, how would I know anything? Which I thought was very funny. And it's like, as much as I find Eloise so grating, I'm saying, it's like, she's growing on me as through episode four, because, like, it's because part of me is wondering if there's an element of, like, she, you know, because she's the smart sister, that, like, she wants to be, she's, like, doubling down on that because she secretly wants to be, like, pretty and, you know, have all this, like, romance stuff going on with her. Maybe she's, like, is starting to want that more. I don't know. That's my guess. And then she is also just, her friendship with Penelope kind of hits a snag because Penelope is upset that Marina is flirting with Colin now, and Eloise goes to Penelope to say, hey, I think I might know who the writer is, and Penelope yells at her and was like, I'm mature. She uses the word mature like 8 times in that,
yeah,
in that speech. I thought was so so interesting, because I was like, girl, you're not mature. So now Eloise is upset with Penelope, and Penelope is heartbroken over Colin, but I don't think this is the end of that story, so I'm excited to see where that goes, because I really like Penelope. I think she's so cute and she's very funny.
Yes.
Yeah,
you know, both Penelope and Eloise are very young ladies, and Eloise is directing all of her energies into part-time sleuthing, born partly out of envy because she wants to be Lady Whistledown, but also you know, she just wants to find out how Lady Whistledown is doing it, and so successfully. Meanwhile, Penelope has a secret that she can't share with her best friend or with anyone else, because it would mean the ruin of her family. And that is that Marina is pregnant. And now Marina seems to want to marry Colin. And not only is she in love with Colin, but also she thinks Colin is a good person. And Marina thinks he's a good person as well. So, you know, it's like, you know, he doesn't deserve to be hoodwinked into marriage. Just because Marina needs a father for her child. So she has, like, all this weight on her. But let's talk about the big... Well, there are a couple of really big things that happen in this series. And the first one, of course, is that there is a discussion about race between Simon and Lady Danbury. And essentially, Lady Danbury is trying to encourage Simon to, you know, make it official with Daphne, because nobody else knows that Daphne and he are putting on a front. And she says something about how Black people are now accepted in society, even at the highest levels, because Queen Charlotte is Black, and because the king fell in love with her, he decided to marry her, and now Black people are accepted in society. And Simon says, well, you know, you can't really depend upon things like that, because if they gave it to us, they might take it away as well. And that is the extent of the conversation.
It's interesting that they try to nod towards the casting, but then it's not, it doesn't feel thorough. It feels like it's plonked down out of nowhere. And it, Lady Danbury basically says, love conquers racism. And you're like, oh, it doesn't. It definitely does not. Especially at a systemic level. Like, it might have some good power within one little family, but, like, that's not enough. So it doesn't, it feels very unfinished. And I, if I recall correctly, and I don't want to be spoilery, but they don't really return to this in the rest of the show that I can remember, right? So it's,
nope.
It's half-assed at best, I would say. And it doesn't really speak to the complexities of what we do and don't see on the screen.
Right. Manish, what about you?
Well, you know, I guess when I first was hearing that this show was going to feature you know, people of different races and not just be, you know, your kind of lily white, you know, period show movie. I mean, it was exciting. I mean, it's always fun to see, you know, people of color in stuff like this, just because, like, we never get to see, you know, people, like, having these kind of, like, you know, romance, royal, you know, royal intrigue, whatever plots, traditionally. But I was thinking that it would just be, like, just, like, the fantasy of it and not, like, have it, any explanation. And I kind of agree with Beth that, you know, it does feel a little half-hearted, and it feels like they threw it in there just because people, like, maybe they predicted people be like, why are there, you know, why is there a black Duke in the show? That's not realistic. So they kind of, like, reshaped it to make it more authentic. But in fact, it made me think about it too much. And I don't think that's a good thing for the show, because now I'm like, okay, but, like, what does it mean for, like, I'm just like, what does it mean on a systemic level, as you say? And, like, you know, and then that recontextualizes, you know, Daphne, like, in the previous episode when she's watching Simon, like, you know, with the spoon or whatever, when anytime she kind of looks at him like that, I'm like, is this some sort of, like, racial fetishization thing? Ugh. Which I would never even thought about, you know? But it's like, you know, Simon is an object of desire. Marina is similar in that, like, you know, she's being kind of, as you say, pimped out to all these old white men. I'm like, it really makes it a little gross in a way that I really was. I wouldn't have even thought of it had they not brought it up. But now they did. It's like, now I'm like, any time there's a person of color in any role, it's like, it becomes about capital R race. But like, if they had just done it where it was just colorblind and whatever, and that this is the fantasy, this is the, you know, the romance part of it, like, whatever, I would have just been like, hey, great, you know, a black Duke, because he's, you know, essentially the best actor for the role. That's why they cast him. You know what I mean? And but it's like, now it becomes such a thing that the show, it's just, the show can't sustain it. And I'm not surprised at all that you say that in the future episodes they don't come back to it, because there's no way to reconcile this now. Because now I'm like, is Daphne just some, like, white girl who's thirsting after, you know, the people of color in her life? You know?
Yeah, and also, like, you know, one of the scenes that we see in this particular episode is that Friedrich, for some reason, takes Daphne to a boxing exhibition, and he's trying to flirt with Daphne and, like, you know, trying to discuss his expectations for marriage, and Daphne can't even pay attention because Simon is also there. So Friedrich has a champion who is fighting in the ring, and it's a white dude, a German, I think, and a big brawny dude. And then Simon's friend Will, who's also a boxer, is the other person that's taking part in the exhibition. And Simon gets really into the whole boxing match thing, and he strips off his coat and rolls up his sleeves, and you can see his muscles. And you're right, Manish, now that, you know, you think about it in terms of race, you sort of look at him and you're just like, oh, like, that's a really hot dude, but what is Daphne looking at,
right?
You know? Because you're right, like, the black bodies, especially black male bodies, are so highly sexualized in a very racial way that putting this whole thing where, you know, race and love kind of intersect, it, and without any further examination or any kind of contextualization or intersection with the other issues of the time, just make it, yeah, it just makes it kind of disgusting. And I have no idea why they wouldn't just go the Hamilton way and be just like, yep, Thomas Jefferson is now a black man, deal with it.
I mean, the other thing is, like, as we get towards the end of the episode, like, having Simon sort of be known as this, like, rake, I mean, that's, like, it puts that into a different context. And then at the end, when, you know, they're going to do the duel, and it's like, I have to protect my sister's honor and my family's honor. And I'm like, I'm just thinking about, like, all those, you know, yeah, in America in the 1960s, you couldn't even look at a white woman. And, you know, we've seen so many stories about, you know, young black boys getting, you know, tortured or worse. because of, you know, their any interaction with some, you know, pale white woman. And so it's like, to me, it's like, I don't think, Shonda Rhimes is a very smart woman, and I'm sure the people that she has hired for the show are very smart, but I think a very dumb decision that they made is to give that scene to Lady Danbury and Simon, because it makes everything so much like, it just brings up all these like questions that I don't think the show wants us to ask and doesn't have any answer for it. Hamilton's a perfect example of this, where it's like, I don't need to have a reason why there are people of color in these positions. I don't care, because like, I'm not watching this for historical accuracy. I'm watching it for the pretty people and the intrigue and the costumes and stuff. So it just like, especially because like Daphne is such a like, she's such a little waif. It's like, really makes it really kind of gross in a way that I wish the show wouldn't be.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I agree.
No, that's great. You're so right. I'm so glad you said all of that. And also gross is Daphne just deciding at the end of the episode that they're engaged.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
She forces him to marry her, which is in the pop culture I consume, not a common thing to see, but it's not better just because it's gender flipped. So that was... I had not even really registered that the first time I watched the show. And I just, on the heels of really trying to think about some of these things more when I rewatched it yesterday, I just thought, this is gross. She's awful.
Right. So let's get to that. Now, one of the major things that happens in this episode is that the prince almost asks Daphne to marry him. And Daphne has a panic attack and runs out into the garden, where Simon comes upon her to ostensibly say goodbye. And as things happen, they end up making out passionately in the garden, where Anthony finds them red-handed and immediately challenges Simon to a duel. So there are two things that happen here. There is what is happening with Anthony, and then what is happening with Daphne. And then I guess the third thing is like what happens with Simon, but you know, we'll come to that in a bit. What happens with Anthony is that he literally looks at this as an opportunity to flee his responsibilities. He is like, well, if Simon kills me, then I'll be dead. That's fine. And then if I kill Simon, then I have to flee the country. And then I can just grab Sienna, and then we can just go live on the continent and be with each other. And I don't have to worry about any of my responsibilities because my brothers will take care of it. Which, Beth, are you still going to defend Anthony?
No, not in this scene. I feel bad for how much I defended him in another episode. This is not great. But Anthony is romantic in his own weird way, right? And the idea that, well, if I murder somebody, then I'll have to flee the country. But at least I can be with my musician lover. So, no, it's not a good look for Anthony.
But, like, why can't he just marry? Like, if the king can marry, you know, a black woman and elevate an entire race of people, why can't Anthony just marry this singer? Like, what's the big deal? So she's a singer. Like,
good question.
It's funny to me to think about, like, Sienna being, like, a marked woman because she's an opera singer. Because I'm like, nowadays opera is so, like, high class that it's, like, hard for me to, like, recontextualize just, like, her being a singer as, like, you know, lower class. Because it's, you know what I mean? It's, like, it's so weird that, like, when they were showing her singing opera, I'm like, yeah, this lady's awesome. She's, like, doing this high class thing that's so, like, difficult. And people do train for years and they're looking at her as if she's, like, some like inferior woman. It's just so I don't understand why he can't just like do that. Doesn't he have the power to do that? Because like he's the man, and is he the oldest or he's the second?
Yeah, he's oldest. The oldest. And okay, I think
so I guess
that's
there's
why,
some
right?
pressure like, there, but I'm like I don't see why you have to like kill someone to get with this woman.
It does seem like he could just move to Europe and leave Benedict in charge. But Benedict wants to be an artist. Is that in this episode, too?
Yeah.
I've lost track. He also wants to go traveling. Everybody wants to be a Bridgerton, but nobody wants to be a Bridgerton.
Yeah, it's like grass is greener.
So these bunch of idiots decide to hold a duel, and it is funny because they're all trying to keep it like an all-male affair, and then Daphne is just like, you idiots, just tell me what's happening, because it's my life. And this is that point where you were talking about, Manish, about like how Daphne has her moments where she's like, well, it's my life, I get to make my decisions as well. Except, of course, as Beth said, she ends up making the decision for Simon as well. So she arrives in dramatic fashion in the middle of the duel, almost gets shot, gets thrown off her horse, and then takes the opportunity of like everybody freaking out to take Simon aside and basically ask him why he's not willing to marry her and why he'd rather die than marry her. Like, that's literally the point, that he would rather die than marry her. And she's just like, why? Like, I'm a catch. And he says, well, I can't have children. And that's what he says, I can't have children, which is something that we will revisit in later episodes. But Daphne then just announces that the two of them are going to get married. Just, you know, he doesn't get to really, like, he just stands there silently while.
So maybe I imagine this, but like, I thought he said, I love you, but I can't marry you. But maybe I just imagined that, because now when you guys are saying it, so it's like, I thought the implication is that like, he wants to, like, she knows that he wants to marry her, but he's saying he can't. But then she's deciding that, because I thought that she's saying, like, so he's saying he can't marry her because he can't have kids, which I think she's taking to mean as if he's impotent. But it's like, literally, he like will not, it's like he won't have kids, actually. Right? Yes. And then, but she's deciding for them that she doesn't care about the big family that everyone's saying she wants. And deciding, well, we'll get married because she's like, whatever, we don't have to have kids because, like, you can't. But so I guess I'm not seeing it that, like, I think she's deciding for them, but it's more like she's telling him that she's okay with, I'm assuming she thinks it's a biological issue, not a, like, you know, promise.
Yeah.
So I'm not seeing it as if her, like, decide, like, forcing him, but more that, like, I'm taking the step to, I'm letting you know that, like, whatever your issues is, I don't care. I want to marry you regardless. And so it's like she has his implied consent, but the condition, and she's like, the condition doesn't matter. Or am I just being too generous to Daphne?
I think you're being generous, but also I think that in addition to trying to save his life, save Anthony's life, and get what she wants, this is the best answer. So she really does have a bunch of factors in this decision. This show is so full of use your words, like, just say, right. I don't care about kids, or I will put that aside, let's get married anyway. She could just say that, but she doesn't say that.
Well, she's also worried about Cressida ruining her reputation as well,
right?
I want to ask you guys if you thought that Cressida knew or had seen, or she definitely saw.
I think she guesses correctly.
Okay.
Right. I think Cressida has a nose for gossip, and she's the mean girl, and she knows exactly where to apply pressure. And I don't think she actually saw anything, because if she had, then she would have made a bigger deal out of it. Also, like I was saying, like, this episode is really about managing your expectations about marriage and what everybody wants out of their marriages. And I think Daphne decides that, you know, she needs to be, I mean, she's all throughout these episodes, Daphne has been very clear about the fact that she needs to marry well, and she needs to marry somebody who will improve her family's standing.
Right.
And basically set up her sisters as well. Like, she's setting a good example for her sisters, and making sure that they have, like, more resources and social connections to draw upon when they make their debut in society. So she has a position to uphold as the eldest Bridgerton girl, and that's what we're seeing here. I wanted to end by just sort of discussing a couple of people that we haven't actually discussed on this show as yet, which is, you know, the Bridgerton siblings, particularly Benedict, and his little subplot, which we have alluded to before but never really discussed. We have these few people in the show who yearn for something beyond what society has imagined for them, as well as the real working class people like Sienna and Genevieve the Modiste, who are actually working for their living. And we see the difference between like what, say, Benedict and Eloise want and what these women or even the artist whom Benedict befriends, you know, what their life is like. And we see Benedict in particular drawing closer and closer to the life that he wants while Eloise is still struggling. Did any of you have any thoughts about Benedict's arc in these episodes?
Well, I've heard that it becomes like queer. I'm not sure which brother it is, but I've heard that one of them is like has a gay-ish arc, and I'm guessing it's Benedict just because it's. I got a lot of undertones from the artist, but that artist guy seemed very like bohemian, I guess, for the time of like. You know, he lives on his own and he has all these naked people and he's drawing and he's all like, whatever about, you know, like, it's kind of like on the fringes of society. I think with Benedict, it's, Eloise is like, you know, if you want, whatever you want to do, you can just do it. Like, if you want to draw, you can just hire a drawing master or whatever.
Yeah.
And it, again, brings me back to Anthony, where it's like, yeah, you can just do this stuff. Like, there are rules, but like, in some ways, the rules don't really apply to you because you have the money and the privilege and the gender to kind of make your own rules because, like, you know, Benedict, if he wants, can just, like, because he's the second sibling, he can just, like, go and be an artist and, like, the weight of the family isn't on him. He has all these freedoms, but he also feels very trapped by his, I mean, it's like you were saying earlier, like, you know, no one really wants to be Bridgerton because there's so much, like, pressure to it. Even when you have the freedom to, you know, go to some random artist's house and no one's really asking where you are.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to me to hear you talk about Benedict because you're right. Like the way, I mean, there is a queer baiting element with the way Benedict is portrayed in this series. Because in the books, Benedict is straight. I mean, all of them are straight. They're very conventional cishet couples. All throughout the seven books, I can't remember how many books there are, but so in this particular series, like I would be interested to see if they actually do go with a like a bi version of Benedict, because there is a, I mean, I don't want to spoil too much for you, Manish, because you haven't seen the other episodes, but there are scenes in which Benedict is clearly with women, but he's also clearly comfortable being with, I mean, he's not homophobic.
Right.
But also, like, I have, like, a very, I know that this is a period in British history where homophobia was rampant.
Right.
And, you know, being gay was actually punishable under the law, like, you know, you could be sent to jail if somebody discovered that you were gay. So that does exist, like that is the real historical context. But again, with this show, I never know, like, what are they doing with the historical context? Because it doesn't seem to have any clarity of thought when it comes to addressing any of these issues. And yet it constantly flirts with these real life issues. So I'm just like, I don't understand what it is that you're trying to do here. Oh, I'm so confused.
Because, like, I think it's really hard to make a series that's supposed to be, like, this is, like, guilty pleasure of the series, right? Like, everyone's watching it for, like, all that. But then, like, when you bring in this stuff, like, you know, queerness or racism, stuff like that, it's really hard to then maintain that, like, frothy, frivolous, like, we all just want to, like, talk about the, like, sex and intrigue and stuff. But I think, like, you know, I'm curious to see how all this stuff plays out in the future, but my guess is that, like, it's going to be what you're saying, like, flirting and then kind of abandoning just for, you know, the next kind of big reveal or for the next, you know, season. So we'll, I'm curious to see what happens with Benedict in season 2, because What a friend of mine who is gay watched the show and was saying that like there's no gay sex in it, and I'm like, that's kind of disappointing considering like who the main target audience of this show is. Like, it's mainly going to be women and gay men. So I'm like, I don't know why they would like flirt with it and then not even like go in with it, but I'm curious to see, because like I would love to see like this show's take on that homophobia in the era.
Well, that's our episode of Binging Bridgerton. Join us next time where we discuss episode 5. Thank you all for joining. Beth, where can people find you?
I'm at Beth Loves Bali on Twitter.
And Manish, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at TheManish89. That's TheManish89. Also, my two podcasts, It Pod to Be You, which can be found at It Pod to Be You on Twitter. And my podcast on queer cinema, Queer Now, which you can find at Queer Now Pod.
Great. And I am Amrita, and you can find me on YouTube at Amrita by the Book, as well as on Twitter at Amrita IQ. I also co-host the Bollywood podcast called Khandan, available on all streaming sites. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you next time.